Welcome to the podcast Palooza Rap Party. My name is Patricia Ansley, and today I am going to give you my top 10 takeaways from the podcast Palooza PD. Look at that alliteration. Woohoo! So, I would like to talk first off about the single point rubric. First off, I had a really difficult time making this in 6 hours. And that was because I definitely didn't make it in 6 hours. And that was because I found it very useful to go to the website and look through all of the Cult of Pedagogy's links and copies of PDFs and things like that that were offered. I immediately stopped the recording as I was listening to the initial podcast for Laws of Learning and adjusted one of my rubrics that I'm going to be using the first day of school. I've always felt that the students knowing what a 5 looks like, usually 5 is my highest score on a rubric, is more important than their learning what a 3, 2, 1 looks like, because I want them to achieve a 5. I don't want them to achieve a 3, 2, or 1. So I really liked the single point rubric and I adjusted it to my taste, but it goes along the lines of my own thinking. So I really appreciated that. So numero uno. Flash feedback. I got the flash feedback in the flash feedback podcast, but I also had already sort of looked ahead without looking at the list because I was going on the in the order of the chart that you had provided for the titles, and the flash feedback got me excited right away. I was hoping for a few more, concrete examples of flash feedback, rubrics that he uses, ways that he has incorporated those into his classroom. But this is something that I strive to do. I'm not particularly great at it because after 21 years of teaching, everything on the page just blares out at me and I'm so worried I'm going to miss an opportunity to teach something. But to attain that focus and to create a rubric that just hits on that point and gives me the comments that I'd like to use, I think was particularly important. So that's number two, and I'll give a third on flash feedback, although I'm still really talking about the 4 laws of learning, and that is this idea of, you know, letting students know that my feedback is about my desire to have them grow and my belief in them in terms of their being capable of that growth. I often find that As a student, gifted student myself, I often felt like, well, gosh, she's not even reading my work because I always just get an A. I want to grow. I want to, as a teacher, not just get an assessment that says, okay, you're a great teacher, thanks so much. I have other teachers to deal with. I want to grow. So I liked that idea of you're worth this. You know, you are worth my time in terms of my giving you that feedback. So that's number three. Delay the grade. I've read articles about delay the grade before, and because of the, actually earlier last year, and because of the pandemic, I didn't really institute it, but I think it's a fantastic idea. I have had students grade themselves and use checklists so that they're giving their own feedback and then giving them the grade afterwards, and that's always really powerful. I really do want to go back into the pedagogy, the cult of pedagogy, and look more carefully at some of the links and things like that that she has online, because I thought that was pretty fantastic. So I think that's number four. I know I'm on 4 laws of learning still, but I just have to tell you that was really the most useful podcast down the list for me. Yes, no examples. I think this would be so cool to do with grammar because, you know, they're going to get mixed up because they've got commas in the beginning, you know, and it might be an introductory phrase, but then, you know, it's not really a participial phrase. It's really an absolute phrase. So I think that would be a kind of a challenging thing to do with grammar, to see if students can use that to, you know, it's a great form of critical thinking and a great way of introducing a concept that's maybe a little more engaging than notes. So that's number 5. Let's see. I wish I had some background music to keep you interested, maybe some, you know, Jeopardy music or something like that. But, a lot of this stuff as a 21-year teacher, A lot of this stuff was really reminders, and not to say that we don't really need reminders, but I'm trying to go through and see what really stood out to me. Now, I have tried to use playlists before. This came from the self-paced classroom. I love the idea of a self-paced classroom, and I do a lot of differentiation, but often I end up letting students read their SSR books and having them use that time to do self-reports and conferences with me and things like that, because it's so consuming to come up with advanced lessons for students who already get sort of the basics, when I've got other students who, so say for point of view, they don't even know what third person is. So coming up, finding a way to say to those advanced students, okay, you know what third person omniscient is, you know what third person limited, etc. are. I'd like you to take the same story and show me how it would be different if it were in each of those voices. So finding ways to do that, I think, is really interesting. I'm kind of going off a little bit of playlists. I'm talking really more about self-paced classrooms. The playlists themselves, though, there is a teacher in my school. She's actually my department head now, Sarah Cusack, who is an amazing teacher, and she uses playlists. I've tried using playlists, and the author is right, you know, the speaker is right that, you know, when you have students who have not been trained in being independent learners, it's like pulling teeth with a regular class. And so I've tried it even with pre-AP kids, and they get a little overwhelmed. There are suggestions that have been made. Maybe I'm giving too many assignments on the playlist and not consolidating it to one lesson. So, you know, I will revisit playlists at some point, but I'd really like to see it done well in action. And again, time is the teacher's enemy. If you saw those comments, those were mine. And there's just never enough time, ever. And this summer, particularly with what's happened with me, I've had even less time because normally I'm planning in the summer. So I think that's number six. Number seven, it did talk about HyperDocs, and I really love HyperDocs. So I want to go back and see some of the tools that I looked at on that self-paced classroom Cult of Pedagogy are tools I've already seen before. But I would like to revisit that and kind of make, if we're going to stay on computers for the rest of time, which it looks like we will at this point, I would like to make lessons more interesting and interactive on the computers. So I did like the idea of must, should, and aspire to. And I think, again, that would work really well in a pre-AP classroom. I am challenged by the idea of getting the students that walk into my classroom in ninth grade to aspire to, you know, keeping their head up off the desk. And while as a teacher I pride myself on, you know, the relationships and things like that, I don't know what's going on with this generation of kids. I do know that, you know, one middle school, the kids are worse than others. But I think maybe it would just be building those abilities for students to be independent before we could get to the aspire to in the core classes. You know, that does tie into, I was very shocked to see how many students are well above grade level in those core classes. And I know we underserve them all the time. As somebody who was a gifted underachiever, particularly in math, you know, I was very underserved and wouldn't do my homework and got an A in the tests, but I got a C in the class because there, you know, wasn't a, you know, 70-30 like there is now. And so everything counted equally. And I think that, you know, maybe that must, should, aspire to, if we could get it creative enough for kids, maybe we could get some of those students who are in that upper echelon, but not in an AP class, pre-AP class, to feel more challenged and interested. Okay, so now I don't remember what number I'm on. I'm going to give you the other things that I've got notes on. So now I am going to talk about critical thinking and the questioning. Let's see, which one is it? The magic of mistakes. I do have a lesson in my classroom called My Favorite Mistake. I do really like the idea of having them create multiple choice tests, because when I've done this in the past, you're right, the speaker was right. He said, you know, then they come up with answers like rainbow and unicorn. But if you say the answer you come up with has to be one that would be a commonly made mistake, then you can hold them accountable for saying rainbow and unicorn, and you can get them to be really thinking critically about the learning process. What else? I think that was probably my least favorite one, was the magic of mistakes. Again, I thought the resources were not as good as some of the other resources. So, and really for me, it's all about being able to use it in the classroom. So I guess that what I'll leave you with is the comments on the UDL. UDL is, to me, very much, you know, the learning menus and RAFT and things like that. Things about that have to do with, you know, I'm going to give this lesson in a way that provides for interest and ability and cultural background, you know, and, the actual need to achieve the objective. And I am an advocate for choice. I think that one of the problems that I have with this as an English teacher is that oftentimes, you know, you think students are ready for something. Their reading scores say they're ready for something. Their, you know, assessments in the classroom and their discussion in the classroom say they're ready for something. And then they try to do it on their own and they're missing key components. So trying to find that sweet spot between I can do this alone, I can do this with assistance, and I can do this with heavy assistance, you know, is really difficult in planning for UDL. And I do believe that students should have those experiences in all three realms. So, and how do you do that in a classroom where you're providing all of that choice? That is the difficulty. I love conferencing, but I can only conference so much. There's just, I can't get to every single student. So, you know, again, time, you know, it's always about time. So I'm actually right now, as I'm talking about UDL, I'm looking over the website. This was my last one. So I really haven't had an opportunity to look at the resources connected to this. This one does talk about a single point rubric. So I'll probably check out some of these books because I really do enjoy looking into the resources that are provided. I like the statements that they have here about choice and voice, something I've always believed in and I fought with other English teachers about, that, you know, just because I have a student who's reading Jason Reynolds, you know, at probably what's a seventh or eighth grade level in the 10th grade, doesn't mean that I'm not giving that student a rich learning experience, because that student may have never read a book by himself before. And Jason Reynolds, you know, particularly his book and verse, I can't remember what it's called, about the elevator, has some really beautiful, rich stylistic elements that a student can learn about. He doesn't need to be reading Canterbury Tales or, you know, Lord of the Flies for him to pick up the teaks that we want him to learn. And at the end of the day, I believe in my heart of hearts that a student who can't read on his own but can tell you about Canterbury Tales because he listened to me talk and did my little worksheets is not as well off as a student who can read on his own and never read Canterbury Tales. So, you know, I am always going to be an advocate for UDL. As someone who has worked in a school with lots of minorities, something we do not do well at Georgetown is deal with our minorities and our LGBT population. It's always very important to me to include those voices in my lessons so that students who want to see themselves and their family and their selves don't look like, you know, typical Georgetown, affluent, Caucasian, religious, conservative child, you know, who, you know, look, there's nothing wrong with that, but not all of our students look like that. And I know for a fact, because my students have talked to me about it, because my students who are in the LGBT community or who are minorities have come to me and addressed it with me, that they don't feel like they're seen. And when we use UDL, we see them. So I think that's probably the last point. I probably gave you more than 10 because I usually do. Anyway, thank you so much for the opportunity. Let me just say to finish this, it is August 9th at 5:21 p.m. and it is the day before school starts, and I am so glad to have this off of my plate and that you allowed me to do this. My summers are usually about vacations and planning and, you know, meeting up with my teacher friends to make my school year better and the year after that, and playing with my plants and my dog. And this year has been a drastic change. Even the vacation was COVID filled and masks and stress about that. And then immediately upon coming home, dealing with all of these family tragedies. Well, a family tragedy and my daughter had there's initials to it, but she couldn't get out of bed, and it was my first grandchild, and I was, you know, trying to help out and excited about the grandchild, and then all of a sudden dealing with a death. So it's just been a very chaotic, very emotional summer. And again, if you're still listening, I just want you to know I thank you so much, because this is the first time in my life that I haven't met my PD goals on time, and you're giving me the extension, meant a lot to me. Thank you so much. Have a good day.